Morning. Good afternoon. The Transportation and Regional Governance Policy Committee will come to order. And we do have a quorum. So I think today I'm going to perhaps ask Representative Carlson if you would move the minutes, please.
Oh, so moved.
Very good. The minutes of January 9th have been moved, and I don't think we need a second. Is that correct? We don't need a second. I don't think so. We do not. Here we go. Okay. All in favor of the minutes being approved, signify by saying aye.
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 Same sign, nay. Okay. Minutes are approved. All right. We have one piece of legislation before us today, and that is House File 3. It's a bill we'd heard last year. So many members are up to speed on it, but we wanted to give another close look at it, and we have Dennis Smith, Representative Smith, here. The bill will be re-referred to Transportation Finance Committee from here. So I will move the bill, House File 3, and Representative Smith, you do have an author's amendment. Are you wanting to take that up here?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. All right. So I'll move the A1 amendment, members. And do you want to give us an idea? Is it the A1? The A1 amendment. Do you want to give us an idea, then, of what you've got here?
Yes, Madam Chair, members. This amendment deals with a few technical and grammatical errors to get the bill in the shape that I would request. There is no significant changes from this amendment to the scope of the bill.
Okay. Is there any questions, comments? Otherwise, all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Right. Oh, nay, I'm sorry. Anybody nay? All right. The amendment prevails. Okay, welcome to the committee, Representative Smith, and please present your bill.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, House File 3 deals with Real ID and makes our licensing system a opt-in program to the Real ID compliance, or you can continue with the existing licensing that you have, the existing license that you have right now. So this two-tier system would be implemented by the end of this year. The cost of this program would be $60,000, $30,000 over the next 2 years. And this bill is very similar to the bill that this body heard and this committee heard last session that passed off the House floor, 8742. With that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Very good. We have folks that have questions they'd like. Otherwise, we do have folks who are wishing to testify. Okay, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask Representative Smith, what is his intention? You had mentioned that, to let us know about the same way as it is now. This bill it's not the same way as it is right now. So it's a little bit misleading because you're putting new things in statute. And I'm wondering why is it important for you to have this in state statute? The 6.25 section.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative. 6.25, the intent behind 6.25 is to have the same licensing system that you currently have today operate tomorrow once Real ID is into effect, once this bill is. The language is required for ease of implementation for the DPS, so rulemaking is not going to be an issue, and we can expedite the process because we're under a time frame. Come October of 2020, after 2 years of implementation, we need to have everyone have real IDs who want them if they want to travel on airplanes or go to federal buildings or military bases.
Okay.
Representative?
Yes, I want to follow up with that. So I want to make sure I understood you correctly. You are saying that can you just explain a little bit more why you're saying it's necessary to do this for DVS? Because without this clause, it is a real ID bill, and it can move forward and gain bipartisan support. And when you put this in here, I don't know that it makes any that big of a difference to DVS to be able to implement it. Can you please explain a little bit more about that, being that this is what's being done now?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, indeed, this license system, today when you apply for a license, it is the exact same rules as it's going to be tomorrow once Real ID is implemented.
Could you,
Representative Bernardi?
Sorry, got distracted here on this end. Can you just say that last sentence again, please?
Representative Smith.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative, certainly. The system, we're not changing any rules for getting a license today as if you would get a non-compliant opt-in license for tomorrow. So we're not changing anything for what's required.
Representative Bernardi.
Madam Chair, but you're putting in a controversial section in this bill to slam the door on people in the state of Minnesota, and I want to know what why do you have to put this in? You already have the rulemaking in place, and the Senate is supportive of a, or last year was supportive of a two-tier system. The House was supportive of a two-tier system. We can move forward, build bipartisan support. And why is it so essential that you have to slam the door and put this language from, your, I believe that you're taking rules language and putting it into statute?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, I respectfully disagree with your assessment and the words you're using about slamming the door. If you apply for a license today, the requirements are exactly the same today as they would be tomorrow once this bill becomes law.
Mm-hmm. Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, Representative Smith, I was getting here a little bit late, the little time crunch between the Capitol and here. I understand we're talking about Section 6.25, right?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, could you repeat your question?
We are talking about Section 8.25?
Representative Smith.
6.2, line 6.25, Section 8, right? Sorry. I haven't been around here for very long, so going back through the history of this particular issue being added into the rulemaking and licensing, that was that ever a statute that was in place and revoked, or is this sheerly, did this come about sheerly from rulemaking by an agency?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, to the context of when that language was added, I would defer that to the Department of Public Safety. They would be best served to answer that question.
Okay.
Representative.
Thank you, Representative. From what I understand, from what I've been told in the history and reading up on it, this was actually never made a statute. It was an administrative ruling that was done through rulemaking for the Department of Public Safety under DVS. And I read up a little bit on how we come about rulemaking here, and right on the Revisers of Statutes website, it says rulemakings used by the state departments is a general statement adopted by an agency to make a law. It enforces or administers more specific or to govern that agency, organization, or procedure. So rulemakings used to look at, first comes the statute, then comes rulemaking to figure out how to implement that statute. In general, that's how it's done. From what I'm seeing here, you're taking a rule that was created without a statute and now having that drive statute law. And I know around this table I've heard many other people in different committees be very frustrated with the rulemaking process, that it takes too long, that departments use too much authority. So it seems a little ironic that we're then now taking the authority that a department used and putting it back into statute. So I guess I was just wanting to know from you if this section was ever statute or if it was only an administrative rule.
Representative Smith, we could certainly ask the department to come up if, you know, if that would help. But
yep. Madam Chair, Representative, in regard to the historical perspective of these words and to your question, I would defer to staff that has a historical knowledge of that. But I can say definitively that if you apply for a license today, you need nothing more tomorrow with this new Real ID bill if you choose the opt-in to the non-compliant license.
All right.
Maybe, thank you, Chair. Maybe I'll direct my question to DVS.
Sure. Okay, great, thanks. And Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Smith, Will there be any collection of biometric data, whether you use the compliant or non-compliant version of these IDs?
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, Representative, no. The Real ID uses no biometrical data in any capacity, and the Department of Public Safety is willing to testify to that today, as well as provide that in writing. That has been talked about some in social media, and that is 100% false.
Very good. Thank you.
I wonder if we shouldn't have the department up here. I think we'd like to call them just to be available to answer any other questions we might have. So we'll invite Don Olson from the Department of Public Safety to join us here. And please state your name for the record. Welcome.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Don Olson. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services at the Department of Public Safety.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Cassandra O'Hearn. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Now, perhaps you could respond to Representative Kosnick's question. I mean, it does seem that there's some disinformation out there that we need to clarify. So,
Madam Chair, if I could just ask to have the question repeated.
Mm-hmm. Representative.
I just wanted to clarify whether there was any biometric data collected, whether you used the current form non-compliant ID or with the proposed new federal compliant real ID.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, no, there is no biometric information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. If there are no other, Representative Yuki.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe while they're out there, they can maybe go over the history of the rulemaking in that little section and how the department came about with that instead of it being directed by statute.
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the rules are given to us by explicit authority in the rulemaking statutes that govern what our agency does. The specifics on this rule were put into rule. That is what we use currently. It was never removed from statute. It was always given under the authority of rulemaking authority, and that is what we use today to be able to apply the application process.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Olson. So from what I understand, it was never statute that then rulemaking had to be used to figure out how to implement it on your end.
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, that's correct.
Okay. Ms. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask Representative Smith and members from the department to comment, if you would, about the coercion of the federal government in terms of the things that it implements. For example, back in the 70s during the time that there was the first Arab oil embargo, the federal government imposed a national speed limit across all of the states for 55 miles an hour. The coercion for compliance was, if you don't do it, you don't get any federal tax dollars for your highways. So with regard to, I've heard the argument, and I think it's a valid one, what makes Minnesota's driver's license valid in Iowa? Clearly we don't set Iowa's laws or standards, and that it's federal law that permits us to use our driver's licenses anywhere in the states, the several states, probably a Commerce Clause issue. But I would be concerned and alleviate some of my concerns or anxieties about the Federal Register and the rulemaking authority of the administrative branch to suddenly apply new standards where you will need this real ID, which, you know, seems to be potentially becoming a national database to buy cigarettes, to buy alcohol, to buy ammunition. Should somebody be concerned that because they're a member of a shooting sports club and goes in and buys 1,000 rounds of shot shell, that they're going to suddenly be on a terror watch list as some extreme wingnut that has an interest in the shooting sports? Alleviate some of my concerns that my constituents have aired to me.
So if I could, members, I know that the commissioner was prepared with a presentation, and I wonder if maybe we should just have you do that. You may be answering some of the questions that are, you know, on people's minds, and then if the Hertas question is not answered, please provide your response to that. Otherwise, we might take you off on a million directions. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. We are here today for the opportunity to provide some additional information and some technical strategies for how to safely implement the Real ID Federal Act. Today I'd like to talk a little bit more specifically about some of the challenges that we see and for you to consider as you go forward with this legislation. The Real ID Act asks for conformity of all states by October 1 of 2020. Minnesota currently does not comply with that statutory language and is currently not working with any extension under our current process. We are one of three states that do not have an extension. For us to be able to implement a Real ID card by January of 2018 is very difficult and challenging, and I wanted to speak a little bit more to what causes that challenge. Currently, the department is under contract negotiations with a new card vendor. We will be bringing that new card vendor into our system and be generating a whole new driver's license in about a year from now. But the vendor has told us that from the time the contract is signed until we actually issue the new card, they will need about a year's time for development and putting the pieces together. To have to issue a Real ID card at the same time when we have a new vendor coming into place is challenging at best. And so we have concerns about the January timeline. We also have our MNLARS project, which is our new information system that's being put into the field for users starting this spring. And that affects the deputy registrar offices. The deputy registrars are working diligently to get their offices in alignment, adjust to the new process. To be able to train deputy or driver's license agents at this time with the Real ID requirements, because this will be a change to their business process, as well as get them fingerprinted and background checked in order to be able to issue the Real IDs, is going to be problematic for them. And so we would like to be in further discussion about that timeline and what might be some mitigations around that. Last year we had applied for an extension with the Department of Homeland Security. We were in communication with them this year to see if there are any changes in granting Minnesota an extension. The conditions are the same. We need to have the legislation by this governing body to provide the department with the authority to move forward with implementing Real ID. We have to apply for an immigration document verification system process, and we have to show a plan that we are making effort toward Real ID. If we can provide that documentation, there's a good chance that Homeland Security would give us an extension and remove the January 2018 deadline that is looming for us. We also have had some questions around the Real ID compliance piece of the bill, and those are in relationship more or less to the variance process, the proof of name change, and we just this morning had conversation with staff, House staff, and research to talk a little bit more specifically about what those changes might mean, and we'll continue to have those conversations as they come along to be able to modify and look at what the requirements are to make sure that the legislation will meet that. So with that, I stand for questions.
All right, Representative Bernardi. Did you have additional questions?
I'll wait for okay. Representative Smith.
All right, Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because Representative Hertas's questions were held off, I'll hold off as well. Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with regards to the discussion that's taking place in terms of proof of name, that seems significant in terms of the implications in terms of what this bill may eventually look like. Would there then be opportunity for that conversation which should take place, bringing that back to this committee?
Ms. Olson.
or who would decide that, I guess?
Madam Chair, and could maybe just clarify that a little bit more so I can answer appropriately.
Well, it seems like a...
Representative Carlson.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. This seems like an important piece to this legislation, and it seems like it still has been unresolved. I'm concerned in the speed in which we are moving forward with this. Sitting on also on civil law with the conversation, it seems like there was some confusion in terms of wasn't a chance for clarification during that hearing. So I'm wondering with some of these unknowns, and this just being, I think, one of several, to where there would be an opportunity to continue on with this conversation so that the public as well as the committee can be informed in terms of these important decisions. So is this taking place literally behind closed doors? What would be the process in terms of shedding some light on those important decisions?
Ms. O'Hearn, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. We're available to provide technical assistance on any language or bills that have been presented to do that. And that is what we're here to do, as we are with staff at any time or with any member of this committee or any other committee.
Ms. Carlson.
Madam Chair, so maybe this is my point of clarification on this. Based on those conversations with providing for identification for the name, for someone's proof of name, what would be a trigger to which that would lead to changes within the bill to where that would warrant more public input?
Ms. Olson? Perhaps, or Ms. O'Hearn?
Yeah, sorry. If I may, Madam Chair, thanks. I really believe that is part of the committee process.
Okay.
and the work. We are here to provide technical assistance and can provide answers. We are not working behind the scenes or anywhere in closed doors. We're here to answer questions and have done so publicly in other committees. We're here and we'll continue to do that.
Thank you.
Very good. Let's see. Ms. Joachim, Representative.
Thank you, Chair. I actually have a question on Section 16, and I'm not sure. I think PVS would be the best to answer. Currently, can you use tribal ID to apply for a Minnesota driver's license?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, yes.
Okay, so...
Ms. Joachim?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So... will you still be able to use tribal ID for a non-compliant license?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members, yes, you will. The tribal ID only comes into question for real ID compliance.
Representative?
Madam Chair, thank you. Ms. Olson, is that because of federal regulations, or is that something we're adding to in our state law?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members, it's because of federal law.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Mason, a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. We're dealing with some really long time frames here, but we're running out of time. Can you maybe explain the difference between our current enhanced driver's license and the real ID? Are they that much apart that somehow the enhanced ID couldn't be adapted in a shorter time frame?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, just the process of enhanced driver's license, as we got the authority to move forward, that did put us in a much better place to be able to become real ID compliant just because of the nature of that process. There's more documentation that's needed. There's more proof that has to go into the vetting of that process. So we're actually pretty far down the line because of enhanced driver's licenses. Enhanced driver's license, while it is a compliant card and can be used for boarding an airplane, it is intended for border crossing. Real ID has different intention. It's intended for federal purposes. So the conversation happened last year, whether we could make real EDLs, real ID compliant, but there is somewhat of a verification. The main thing with EDL is that you have to show proof of U.S. citizenship, and that differs than under the real ID. Thank you.
Now, I believe you may have finished your presentation, and if so, how about if Representative Hertas, can you redirect your question or rephrase it so we know what it was you were asking there, please?
Is this a do-over?
Well, I just didn't know if, there's been time elapsed, and
Madam Chair?
I'm sorry?
Madam Chair?
Oh, Representative Smith.
Yeah, if I could, I'm prepared to answer the question. If the representative would like to ask it again, I'm fine with that, but I can answer it as well if you would like.
All right, why don't you go ahead, Representative, then.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative, as we know, in 2005, when this federal law became into effect, the Secretary of Homeland Security, there was a phrase in that bill that was very vague about future use. As we know, this legislature cannot control that language. But what we can control is what that secretary or any future secretary uses for that language as it impacts Minnesota, our state. So in this bill, there's two components that I think assuage your concern and the concern that many of us have about a future use for that. Number one is that if the secretary is considering changing the scope of that use, they need to notify our legislative body, all of the committee leads and committee minority leads, and all the chairs about that respective change. Additionally, if a change were to happen, before our Department of Public Safety can implement or work with the federal government in any capacity, this body, our legislature, needs to pass an affirmative bill granting them that authority.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for that explanation, Representative Smith. I think that does help clarify things, but the other part of my question is, being this is somewhat of a transportation-related instrument, if you will, to board planes and to move about the country freely, if that administrative branch wants to start making enhanced rulemaking authority for its uses and intended applications, then my question would be, what do you foresee as the coercive force of the federal government that's going to pressure Minnesota into being compliant? Even though we're sovereign and we could say we're not going to do that, does that mean we lose federal transportation dollars for our road system? What would you anticipate would be other types of recourses that the federal government would use to coerce Minnesota and its legislature to comply with their directive?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, if that were to happen, and hypotheticals are dangerous to answer, but I would stand alongside of you and many in our body fighting for the state's rights in that regard. And this bill offers two protections to give us that fight. If that were unsuccessful, I would anticipate a similar incentive for our state that we're about to embark upon right now, which is that commerce will be significantly impaired if we do not comply with this requirement. Now, the great thing about this bill that I spoke to many of you on both sides of the aisle about this bill over the last year or so is that you have options with this bill. You can have the same license that you have today, or you can opt into the Real ID program and have a license to travel on airplanes with that. There's an economic argument that doesn't get spoke about very much for this. If you want to save money, opt into the Real ID and use the license that would be in your pocket that you use for driving to board aircraft, to go into military facilities, to go into federal buildings. If you choose to spend an additional $100 or so per person in your family, you can get a passport. Opt into the non-compliant license, get a passport, and use that for travel. This bill gives consumers of our state options, gives them choices, it saves money, and it's a really good bill for that reason.
Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I'm hearing you correctly, if I already have a passport, I wouldn't need to participate in the Real ID program, that everywhere I want to go or what I want to do, that a U.S. passport will suffice. Is that correct?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, correct.
Okay. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to the point about what Representative Hertas was saying regarding coercion of the federal government, I think it's important to note the difference between incentives and coercion. And I believe that there have been different rulings constitutionally. I just have this in front of me. The federal government may not compel the states to enact or administer a federal regulatory program. The Constitution enables the federal government to preempt state regulation contrary to federal interests, but it permits the federal government to hold out incentives as a mean of encouraging them to adopt regulatory schemes. So it does not, however, authorize Congress simply to direct the states to provide for different things. So, and this was Prince v. the United States, the court we wrote enforced this in Prince v. the United States by rejecting as well any program that compels a state to enact a regulatory program, which I believe Real ID does. It's compelling by putting us in a very difficult position of either our citizens are going to be forced to live with the uncertainty of whether or not their license will continue to allow them to enter certain federal facilities or board commercial aircrafts. And that, to me, actually, that is coercion. And so I just wanted to add that to Representative Hertas's concerns.
All right, thank you. Representative Bernardi?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it okay to direct it to Representative Smith now regarding his bill?
Okay. Certainly, sure.
The question I have for Representative Smith is, do you have a companion bill in the Senate?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, there is a bill that has been jacketed for the Senate. The Senate is looking at different language, and to my knowledge, that bill has not been entered into their hopper as of yet.
Okay. Representative, was there a follow-up?
No, that's fine.
Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to make sure I'm sorry I'm bringing forward so many questions. I had constituents asking me and contacting me about a variety of different sections that were affecting them. On Section 6, Subdivision 5, it's entitled Temporary Lawful Admission, but when I look up the statute that it's referencing, it's talking about anatomical gifts. Can you tell me if it changes the way we delegate being an organ donor on our driver's license, or how this changes things? It's kind of vague in the language. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, all of the designation, organ donation among the other things, if you currently have them on your license, you would be able to have them on the on your license in the future, whether you choose to opt into the Real ID license or whether you choose to opt into a non-compliant license.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I thought we had maybe I'm wrong. I thought we had also passed a law that you have to actually opt out of being an organ donor, but it's an opt-in on a driver's license.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, Representative, my point is that if you want something on your license and you can have it on your license today, you can have it on your opt-in Real ID license tomorrow or your opt-in non-compliant license tomorrow as well.
Representative?
Madam Chair, so then maybe I could have you just clarify Subdivision 5 for me, because this is actually saying the commissioner is prohibited from issuing a driver's license. It talks about lawful temporary admission period. I guess I'm not understanding what that is. Maybe DVS can explain.
Okay. And Representative Smith, we do have, of course, Representative or Mr. Burris here. Would there be some help that you could provide us here, Mr. Burris?
Madam Chair, Representative Joaquim, that provision creates a restriction in it on when driver's licenses and Minnesota ID cards could be issued, and it's in the scenario around those who have a lawful temporary admission period. So it's those who are been legally permitted to enter the United States for some set length of time. And the provision is to prevent issuance of a driver's license or ID card if that expiration of that admission period is within 30 days of the application. And that reflects part of the requirements under the Real ID federal regulations. And it's placed into a statute that deals with when driver's license and identification cards aren't issued and eligibility around issuance.
Is there a follow-up, Representative?
Yeah, and maybe I can just take this offline later, because the statute I'm looking up that's referenced here isn't the same one that you're talking about, so I'm a little confused. Thanks.
right, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Representative Dennis and maybe others as well. It seems to me really the crux around a lot of the dispute and direction here has to do with identification and information verification versus collection and maintenance. And so could you help me understand when you go in and get your driver's license currently today, prior to Real ID, there's a certain amount of information that you have to provide in order to get that driver's license. My understanding is that there isn't an awful lot of difference between Real ID and currently today. You still need to provide that same information. Is there any of that information that is now collected and maintained by the department, or is it just verified in order to get the Real ID?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, it is true that the information is very similar to what you need in order to attain a non-compliant license or our only license for today if you were to ask for an opt-in to a Real ID license tomorrow. The information is contained in the same system that our information today is being contained in. It's not being shared with the federal government in any capacity. It's not being shared with any other states in any other capacity.
Representative.
Follow-up. Which it seems to me that we're really talking about the same system, only is there any information that currently the Department of Public Safety right now maintains about us that's not part of the driver's license, the front of the driver's license itself?
Representative?
Madam Chair, Representative, the information is the same, although when you, the first time and subsequent, when you apply for, if you opt in for a Real ID, you need to provide information that you provided before, such as your Social Security card. Once you supply that, you do not need that for a renewal, but you would need that for a renewal if you continue to opt in to the Real ID. That's one example. Another would be that you need to sign a declaration of truth with penalty of perjury that the information you're submitting is accurate as well. So those are ostensibly are the only changes.
Representative.
Thank you, and I think that's kind of what I understood too. And yet, the information that you provide them, they are not taking photocopies and keeping it in any kind of database. Is that correct?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, they are keeping this information.
Okay.
And it's important to note, and I've received this question in a variety of forms in the past, this information that they're keeping is information that the government gave us in one capacity or another. Our Social Security card came from the government. Our birth certificate was created by the government. So it is true they're hanging on to that information for 7 or 10 years, depending on the length or the type of hanging on to it. But this is information that they already have.
Okay, thank you.
We do have a number of folks who wish to testify, so I think we'll proceed with that at this point. We'll call Bentley Graves, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, please, if you could come to the witness stand. Good afternoon, Mr. Graves. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Just for some level setting at the outset, the Minnesota Chamber is the state's largest business trade association. We have 2,300 members across the state, all sizes of businesses, all types of businesses, all industries, all corners of the state. I want to first thank the bill's author, Representative Smith, and the chair for bringing this legislation forward so quickly. This is an issue that we've had a keen interest in now for a couple of years. We were very disappointed that the 2016 session ended without action on this bill, but are pleased that this has become a priority to get done quickly in this legislative session. And the reason for that is obvious. You know, about a year from now, the federal government will start enforcing the Real ID requirements to board federally regulated commercial air travel. And as you know, Minnesota is currently one of three states that is not yet either in compliance or becoming compliant with the federal Real ID law. And so that would mean, if no action is taken, that about a year from now, you need additional forms of identification to get on an airplane. And frankly, this is an issue for a number of our members that require their employees to have access to efficient air travel. And while that is certainly hanging out there about a year from now as a serious concern, a number of our other members have issues already with Minnesota's noncompliance with the federal Real ID law. Already, if you'd like to gain access to a federal facility of many kinds, military bases, other secure sites, you cannot currently use your Minnesota driver's license to do that. And there are a number of our members who require their employees to have regular access to these facilities and these sites. So this is an issue that we want to see resolved expeditiously. We appreciate the quick work this session so far to do that. We stand ready to help in any way that we can, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Senator Bernardi. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Graves, I have a question for you regarding the Section 8, 6.25. How does the Minnesota Chamber feel about this language?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative. So as I'm sure you know, I think you may have a letter at your place from the Minnesota Business Immigration Coalition, of which the Minnesota Chamber is a member. The issue of undocumented immigrants having access to driver's license is one that we've worked on for some years. You'll see this is a letter here from a couple years ago. But what you also see in this letter is us urging, at the time, Chair Kelly, and at similar times in similar ways in previous years, urging the legislature to take this issue up as a standalone issue. We do believe, for the reasons outlined in the letter, that this is an issue that the legislature should address. But we don't believe that it is an issue that ought to weigh down the Real ID debate. The House, for the various reasons that I think Representative Smith has articulated, has chosen to forego rulemaking to expedite the process of Real ID compliance, and they see that as part of an issue of doing that. Frankly, from our perspective, it's an issue that right now is prohibited by a rule, and we believe that the legislature should act to affirmatively grant licenses to undocumented immigrants. We believe that's the case with the restriction that's currently in place in rule, and if it were to follow into to statute by way of this bill, it would still be something that we believe the legislature should affirmatively act to grant. So our position on that issue hasn't changed and won't change. We believe that is a separate issue from this, and we believe that this is an issue that should be dealt with quickly and expeditiously by the legislature.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Graves, for being very eloquent about the Chamber's view on it being a standalone bill. I agree with you. We should be doing it affirmatively. But aren't you concerned that the language that's in there will prohibit us from even doing that in the future?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, the undocumented immigrants are already prohibited from having licenses under current rules. This bill wouldn't change that. And whether it's a prohibition that's in rule or in statute, it's something that we believe that the legislator ought to act to affirmatively grant to undocumented immigrants, both to ensure that they have the certainty over time to use that license and know that it's not going to be taken away from them by whim of administration, but also to make sure that the business community has certainty as well.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Graves, so based on the testimony you just gave, is it a fair statement to say that you feel, as the representative for your organization, that Section 6.25 is unnecessary?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think what you heard me say is that the House has made it clear back to last session that they believe that rulemaking would take too long to implement Real ID, and so they've therefore foregone rulemaking and instead put it in a statute, and that's why I believe the bill looks as it does today.
It was basically just a yes or no question. But thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Graves. And we'll move on. We have Isaiah is here with two representatives, Reverend Grant Stevenson and Catalina Morales. Welcome to you both, and if you would provide your names for the record.
My name is Jackson Bond. I'm filling in for Catalina. And
could we get your spelling, perhaps? I didn't catch the whole name, sir.
My name is Jackson Bond, B-A-H-N.
Okay, thank you.
And this is Jose Sanchez, and I will be translating for him.
And could we get the spelling of Mr. Sanchez's name? Sanchez? Sanchez. And first name?
Jose.
Jose. Okay, good. Okay, why don't you proceed?
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jose Sanchez. Y soy voluntario de Isaías.
I'm a volunteer with Isaiah.
Vengo para pedirles que quiten la línea 6.25 de esta propuesta.
I come to ask that you remove the line 6.25 from this proposal.
Porque impediría que la comunidad inmigrante saque una licencia en el futuro.
Because it will prevent immigrants from getting licenses in the future.
Nuestra comunidad necesita esta licencia para poderse transportar a la escuela, al trabajo o de compras.
Our community needs licenses to get around, to get to school and our work, and to get groceries.
Estoy representando a mi comunidad porque ese miedo que está sintiendo, quiero que ustedes lo escuchen.
So I'm here to represent my community because I want you to hear about the fear that my community has.
Y tengo una esposa que sería afectada si esta propuesta pasa.
And my wife would be affected if this proposal were to pass.
Por eso les pido que toquen sus corazones, nos escuchen.
So I ask that you listen to us and feel it with your heart.
Para que esta propuesta no pase y podamos seguir trabajando y cooperando para este gran estado, para esta gran comunidad de Estados Unidos que nos acoge y queremos ser parte de ellos. Queremos ser parte de ustedes también.
So I ask that you not include this proposal.
Que nos escuchen, porque somos parte de, queremos ser parte de esta gran comunidad de Estados Unidos.
And that you listen to us because we want to be a part of this great community.
Por eso necesitamos de la ayuda de ustedes para que no pase esta propuesta y podamos obtener una licencia para poder caminar y manejar con tranquilidad.
And so we need the licenses so that we can live and work in safety and peace.
Le pido a Dios y a ustedes que nos escuchen y que todo salga bien para bien de todos nosotros. Gracias.
So I ask that you listen to us and that you do what's right for everyone. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Sanchez. Mr. Bond, we appreciate that. There's some questions. Who's that?
Representative Barr.
Okay, sorry. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and also thank you, Mr. Bond and Mr. Sanchez. One question that I have for either of you to answer is how would it make it more difficult for them to get a license to drive?
Gentlemen?
Porque si no tienen un estatus legal, eso les impediría sacar el real ID.
So without legal status, this will close the door on us being able to get licenses.
All right.
Yo tengo una licencia que la he estado renovando, pero si pasa esta propuesta, yo no voy a poder renovar.
Okay, so I have a license now, and if this proposal were to pass, I wouldn't.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Oh, Mr. Carlson, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the question, this is a question for Representative Smith. With the testimony that we just heard, is it the author's intent to make Real ID non-compliant driver's licenses off limits for undocumented Minnesotans by including the lawful status language in statute? It's about the most succinct way in which I can phrase that question.
Mr. Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's the author's intent to have the same laws in effect today that would be in effect tomorrow for once Real ID is implemented for people who choose non-compliant licenses.
We've heard that answer before. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Michelle Garnett McKenzie, the Advocates for Human Rights.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm here for Reverend Grant Stevenson from Isaiah, who was not able to make it.
Okay, and please give us your name for the record.
My name is Lars Neigstedt. I'm Policy Director for Isaiah.
All right, very good. Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. To clarify on just on the final point that was raised by Representative Barr, to Mr. Sanchez, the issue at stake here is that until 2003, you didn't need to show immigration status to get a driver's license in Minnesota. That changed not through statute. There was an attempt to change that through statute. The legislature chose not to act on that. It changed only through administrative rulemaking under Commissioner Charlie Weaver, who was DPS commissioner at that time. You might recognize his name as he's now the head of the Minnesota Business Partnership. So now it's in administrative rulemaking. What would happen under House File 3 is it would move what is currently only in administrative rules and codify that into statute. So it does, in effect, slam the door on the 100,000 undocumented immigrants who live in Minnesota, many of whom are driving without access to a license and are uninsured anyway. And so it would slam the door to any potential administrative rulemaking change that could happen in the future. So there's no reason that Minnesota could not pass a clean Real ID bill and keep the option for those who want driver's licenses only, whether for privacy concerns or immigration status concerns. The Senate bill last year did this. It did this with strong bipartisan support, including 12 Republican votes for that clean Senate Real ID bill. The business community, law enforcement officers, the faith community, including evangelicals, as well as the Catholic Conference, labor organizations, community organizations, immigrant rights groups, all think that the legislature should proceed in this manner, pass a clean Real ID bill that does not get into this immigrant driver license access issue. So that's what we're here to try to clear up. We think this is a moral issue. We think the Bible is pretty clear in our Christian tradition that we are to welcome the stranger, welcome the foreigner. We think that this particular bill is out of step with those values, and we hope you will consider that as you take this vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Neigstedt, was it?
Correct.
I wonder if you could spell that, please.
Sure, Neigstad.
Okay, very good. Thanks for your testimony. And do we have Ms. McKenzie today? Okay, very good. Welcome to you, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Michelle Garnett McKenzie, and that my last name is McKenzie, M-Z, capital K-E-N-Z-I-E. And mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to
please
speak
proceed.
To you. I am the Deputy Director of the Advocates for Human Rights. We're a nonprofit organization based here in Minnesota that works with over 1,000 volunteers each year to implement civil society, reinforce the rule of law, and ensure that promotion and protection of internationally recognized human rights. I'm an attorney. I've worked in the field of immigration law since 1994, primarily with victims of persecution and torture. And I do want to thank Representative Smith for providing us with a framework which I think allows all Minnesotans flexibility and options, and that is the intent, and we recognize that and are pleased to see these tiered options. But we do urge the deletion or the amendment of line 625, which has been of some question, from House File 3. It does seek to insert unnecessary language into Minnesota statute. Line 625 has nothing to do with real ID compliance. It has everything to do with non-compliant driver's licenses, as it is provided in the bill as introduced. Real ID is dealt with later in Section 10. Instead, it seeks to require non-compliant licenses to use the same identification requirements as real ID compliant documents. It goes beyond the existing regulatory framework, however, by narrowing the list of acceptable documents to those prescribed by federal regulation, not by state regulation. The regulation that it refers to, 6 CFR 37, includes a list of acceptable minimum documents that are found at 6 CFR 37.11. Those documents include an unexpired passport, birth certificate from a state, not some of the different territories currently accepted, consular records of birth abroad, permanent resident cards, work permits, unexpired foreign passports with unexpired visas, which is a trick, let me tell you, because they don't coincide with the period of authorized stay, and certificates of naturalization, citizenship, or other real ID licenses. That's the list of documents. That is a different list than the one we have before us here in our current regulations. Requiring applicants for non-compliant licenses and IDs to produce one of those documents would make it even more difficult for lawfully present aliens living here to drive, to become self-sufficient, and rebuild their lives. Existing regulations pose a heavy burden and a regular problem for the advocates, asylum seeker clients who are here lawfully, who are trying to find safety from persecution and torture, and who have significant barriers and luckily a variance process built into state regulation to allow them to make sure they can drive and integrate. But there are other humanitarian provisions as well that may find difficulty in accessing licenses if we have to refer to federal regulation. That makes integration of those newcomers even more difficult than it already is. But I think we need to recognize that while the impact of Line 625 on lawfully present refugees and immigrants might be unintended, the undocumented Minnesotans are really the target of this line. It doubles down on current regulatory restrictions, restrictions which, in answer to your question, Representative Yarkum, received numerous hearings in the legislature in the early 2000s and were rejected repeatedly before being enacted through emergency rulemaking without notice and comment, and remain with us today. Allowing 625 to be included in this bill, which really purports to bring Minnesota into compliance with federal real ID, blocks an important discussion, but an unrelated one, of whether continuing to deny driver's licenses to undocumented Minnesotans is good public policy. In recent years, I think this legislature, like many others around the United States, has engaged in really thoughtful discussion about whether driver's licenses for undocumented people is a good idea, whether the efficacy of conflating our permission to drive in this state with federal immigration priorities really serves Minnesota's interests around public safety and economic empowerment of our families, businesses, and others. Unfortunately, Line 625 is not simply enacting the rules as they are in place today. It is narrowing them, and it is an attempt to foreclose a discussion of this important debate, which should be, in our view, a standalone debate where we can give that attention. A vote to delete or amend line 65 is not a vote to give undocumented Minnesotans access to driver's licenses. They don't have that now under regulation. We're not asking people to take that vote without consideration of that impact. But a vote to allow line 65 to remain in the bill, despite having nothing to do with implementation of Real ID, is a clear statement against Minnesota's tradition of welcome and inclusion. The approach taken throughout the rest of House File 3, which attempts to create choices for Minnesotans who are concerned about their privacy, that allows Minnesotans who object on religious grounds to having their photographs appear on their IDs, allows our seniors to continue driving or to continue carrying an ID once they've stopped driving that doesn't expire and that relieves them of that burden of having to renew IDs is a really sound approach, and I am very grateful for Mr. Smith's attention to making sure those exist.
Ms. McKenzie,
I hope that can as well.
That's, kind of wrap it up.
That's
we're,
it.
We're worrying about our time constraints right
that's
now.
That's
so.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Very, very good. Thank you so much for your testimony. I don't think there are any questions. So if we could have Twyla Brace come to the witness stand, please. Welcome, Ms. Brace, and please state your name for the record. And please proceed. 2 to 3 minutes, if we could. We're going to try to put some a little bit of time constraint on them now. So.
Madam Chair, my name is Twyla Braze, President of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and I would hate to think that I might be the only one that might have a time constraint. My testimony will not probably be very long, but I just know that nobody else has had one, so I just want to put that on the record.
I understand.
So I'm President of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and we oppose this bill and are fully supportive of the 2009 Minnesota law currently in place prohibiting implementation of Real ID. It's important to understand that Real ID is a national ID card under federal control, and we consider it one of the biggest government grabs ever in the state of Minnesota. Now, for some of the things that have been said, so I'm going to, Matt, would you hand, is Matt, maybe he's already doing it, handing out the testimony? Or, yeah. Thank you. So you're going to get your own copy of the testimony, the written testimony, but there are several things that I just want to say regarding what has already been said here. So one of the things, there was a question about biometrics, and I can't remember who asked that. So we just looked it up in the Real ID rule where it actually talks about the requirements for the surface of the driver's license or identification card, and it does mention biometric data interchange formats, Part 5, face image data. The director of the Federal Register approves this incorporation by reference. So this was added to the rule. And in addition to that, Homeland Security Chertoff said back in 2007 that while the Homeland Security was not going to require an RFID chip, or they were also not going to require biometrics, they were not going to say they couldn't do them either. They were leaving that up to the state. But as soon as you hand over licensure, driving, identification to the federal government and give them this kind of control, then the next time that they say you are not compliant if you do not have the RFID chip or if you do not have the biometric metrics that we choose, then you can just see the power of the federal government to decide that, yes, you do have to do biometrics, as a matter of fact. Also regarding the number of states, it was stated up here that there's only 3 states that are non-compliant. There's actually 8. This is off of Homeland Security's website. And the ones that are in yellow are also non-compliant. They just happen to have an extension. There's only 23 states that are compliant within the United States. And so last year there might have been 3, but resistance is growing. There's now 5 more than there was last year. In addition to that, it's important to talk about coercion. It was great to hear Representative Whalen talk about coercion versus incentives. The coercion that's happening are the threats, but there have been 5 deadlines. I just read something from a newsline from the Department of Homeland Security where in 2012 it said that the Secretary of Homeland Security has assured us that the 2013 deadline is the last deadline. Well, there have been deadlines since that time. And, of course, that's because the federal government understands that it cannot commandeer the state. And this is a commandeering of the state, and if the state passes this, they have agreed to be commandeered, have agreed to have to federalize the license. And so it's important to understand that, yes, there's coercion here, but it's not coercion that you have to comply to or listen to. In addition to that, the opt-in versus opt-out. There's no opt-in versus opt-out. The Federal ID Act says and has requirements for both a not-for-federal purposes and a for-federal purposes license. Both of them are in the Real ID Act. You might decide to have a not-for-federal purposes license, but you're still within the Real ID Act. And the really important thing about that is how your data will be required, and all data according to the rule. This is from the, right out of the rule. If you comply with this, you have to provide electronic access to all other states to information contained in the motor vehicle database of the state. The federal government gave $13 million to the state of Missouri to create the database for Real ID, but instead AMBA has that. It's known as the hub. And so it is indeed creating a centralization and access point for all the states, for all the states to provide the data and all the states to access the data. In addition to that, I wanted to talk about the changing the scope and the comfort language that the author said that you have. But you really don't have that comfort language, because the federal change where it says that they have to come, that they can't implement it without coming back to you, it's not going to require you. It's not even going to require the state. When the federal government says that you have to use your Real ID to access ammunition, to buy ammunition, it won't have anything to do with the state. It will have to do with the gun shops. It's the gun shops that will find themselves in trouble if they do not require the Real ID. And for healthcare, the clinics and the hospitals, if healthcare, which is one of our concerns as a healthcare organization, no card, no care, right? It will be the clinics and the hospitals that will be requiring that card. It will not have anything to do with the state. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I want to say, above and beyond the testimony that you already have in your hands, is I want to say that compliance can be redefined on a regular basis. In their last rule that they put out, it said that the states must resubmit their application for compliance every 3 years on a rolling basis. And you will see that within the testimony that I have provided. So altogether, what we're looking at as an organization is that this is an unconstitutional commandeering of the state that the legislature is allowing to take place. There's no reason that we ever have to comply with Real ID. And it would be interesting to find somebody actually deciding, or the government actually deciding, to come into an airport and to stop certain people from flying and to have the first lawsuit, because the lawsuits are all about anti-commandeering. You cannot, as Representative Whalen said, the state does not have to comply. But as long as you comply willingly, most of the people in Minnesota will never know that they have a national ID card. They will never know what the federal government is doing with their data or the control or the future uses that it could be required for. And there will not be a lawsuit to challenge the unconstitutionality of what's taking place here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, John Keller, Immigrant Law Center. Is he available? Thank you, Ms. Brace. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is John Keller, K-E-L-L-E-R. I'm the Executive Director of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. We are the state's largest provider of legal services to low-income immigrants and refugees. Last year, we worked on 4,600 cases, and our clients came from 103 different countries and resided in 85% of Minnesota's counties. Our work at the Immigrant Law Center is primarily representing individuals and families as they navigate the federal immigration process, a process that not only closes the door to 11 million people currently, but also creates pathways that can take 25-plus years to legally reunify families. Because of the broken federal system, we currently find in Minnesota 95,000 undocumented immigrants. About 6,000 of the undocumented immigrants in Minnesota have recently obtained legal status through the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. These are young people who came as children, young people who arrived in the U.S. under the age of 16, and who, under a recent order by President Obama, now have not only lawful status in the U.S., but the ability to obtain driver's licenses in Minnesota. I testify today on two key points. Number one, the debate around immigrant driver's licenses, licenses for those that are precluded by rule today, is a debate you should not be having in Real ID. The Real ID conversation is around creating licenses for the vast majority of Minnesotans who want to comply or are willing to comply with the Real ID federal statute. Within the federal statute of Real ID, there is created the ability for all states to create a non-compliant license. What's happened with line 6.25 in the drafting of this bill is the application of lawful immigration status to a non-compliant option. The solution is to, if you want to apply lawful immigration status for Real ID purposes, to clarify that lawful status line applies only for cards or licenses that are compliant with Real ID. Simple. That's the version of the bill, as previous testifiers have testified to, that passed with bipartisan support in the Senate last year. I believe that same version of the legislation will pass again this year in the Senate, and we can avoid having the same outcome as last year by addressing this issue here. I also support my second reason for testifying. You've received a written copy of the Minnesota Business Immigration Support for previous standalone legislation for immigration driver's license, for licenses for those that cannot currently obtain driver's licenses. Let's have that conversation. I know many of you understand the importance of immigrants to Minnesota's workforce, not just the business community and the five or six other business associations that signed that letter and have supported the passage of a driver's licenses for the undocumented the last two sessions in the Senate, but many folks from faith perspectives, from union perspectives, and also from family integrity purposes. The majority of undocumented persons in Minnesota and across the country have been in the U.S. for 15 years. The majority of undocumented parents have one child or more who was born in the U.S. Let's have a conversation about the public safety benefits of providing licenses for that community, and let's have it in a direct way rather than including it or precluding it through line 6.25 in the current legislation. And to close, I'll simply say we're not plowing new ground. 14 states, territories, and the District of Columbia have already passed driver's licenses for persons who cannot prove lawful status. 11 of them have approved that legislation in the last 2 or 3 years. The trend has been to recognize very important public safety accomplishments for people the federal government is failing, but the states need to retain. A cold weather state like Minnesota is not receiving migration from our other states. Our workforce solutions, one of the reasons the business community and the ag community depend on immigrants and support immigration reform and have worked alongside the Immigrant Law Center for the last 10 years to fix our problems in Washington, are the very reasons why we should address this outside of the Real ID context. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Keller. Appreciate your testimony. We have Mr. Jimenez, or we have Mr. Jimenez. Mm-hmm. Welcome, sir. And if you could give us an abbreviated version, 2 to 3 minutes, that would be very appreciated.
Please. Should I just say ditto to the
Please state your name for the
Madam
record.
Chair, my name is Henry Jimenez. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. And again, we just are here to express our concerns with line 6.25. You know, with a with our population being just 300,000 or so here in the state of Minnesota, and 35 to 50,000 of those potentially being undocumented, a line like this is a significant impact on our community, and we want to make sure that you're aware of that. I want to give you an example. 91% or so of Latino youth under the age of 18 are native-born, meaning they're either born in this country or most likely in this state, have at least one parent who is an immigrant. I really would like for parents to be able to drive their daughter or son to their school if they have to, especially in greater Minnesota. We're not asking for driver's licenses here. I think it's just a line that's not necessary in this bill. But I think it's sending a message to the Latino community and other immigrant communities around the state. So we urge you to consider the removal of 6.25.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Jimenez.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And our last testifier, Danielle Robinson Birod. Good afternoon, ma'am. Please state your name for the record.
Sure.
Please proceed.
Danielle Robinson Brand. Hi. I'm an immigration attorney with the Center for Immigrant Justice in Minneapolis. I'm a member of the Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee, and I'm also the chair of the Minnesota Dakota's chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. I'm mostly here in my capacity as an activist for immigrant rights. I view the line that everybody's been talking about in testimony as a specific exclusion of undocumented immigrants to access the driver's license. I do not think, and this is something that this committee really needs to explore more and has not come up enough in testimony today or in questions, why are other states pursuing a two-tier licensing system that benefits undocumented immigrants, that allows access to licenses by people who cannot prove their lawful immigration status? There are real public policy benefits to allowing mothers and fathers, working people, to access a driver's license in a state like Minnesota that is supremely car dependent, especially in greater Minnesota. For me, it's something that I cannot stand idly by when Representative Smith is going to include this exclusion, especially when Real ID legislation played out last year all the way to conference committee, and there was a hope that these things could get worked out through rulemaking and that this exclusion would not be embedded within potential legislation. We need to talk specifically about what would happen if undocumented immigrants could access the driver's license. There will be many more people who are already on the roadways getting insured, learning the rules of the road. If you look at the data that's available on the internet about some of the states that have implemented a two-tier system and currently offers driver's licenses to individuals who cannot prove their lawful status, you have an upsurge in the number of organ donors. Undocumented immigrants are becoming organ donors in great numbers. They're getting insurance for their cars, and they buying new cars. There are so many public policy impacts that a two-tier licensing system could have for our state, and we need to pursue this two-tier system. And we need to stand up against an anti-immigrant piece of legislation. We cannot call it anything else but that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Barad. We have an amendment we have to take up. So, Mr. Killiam from MAC, if you would just quickly say hello and give us.
Chair Runbeck, Mitch Killiam with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. As you can imagine, this is a big issue for us out at the airport. It's kind of been portrayed as having a future impact possibly on Minnesota, but just quickly, I will tell you that it's already having an impact on us out there. We are continuously seeking new air service for the state, whether it's with existing carriers that are operating out there today or new carriers that might operate in the future. And having this Real ID issue hanging over our head affects our ability to attract new carriers. If you are a carrier that might come here in January to start operating with a new expensive airplane, would you be interested in putting that airplane on the ground at Minneapolis with this hanging over our head?
Okay.
We have a tremendous amount of confusion out there with our passengers today. We would like to see some resolution to this issue.
Great. Thanks for your perspective, Mr. Killiam. We do have an amendment, the A3 amendment that we need to take up. So is that yours, Representative Holstein?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A3 amendment, and I'm also Representative Bernardi's co-authoring this with me for the record. I wanted to mention that. And also I'd ask for a roll call when we vote on it.
Very good. Do you want to describe then?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't have to say too much either because most of the points I would like to make have been made by the many of the testifiers. But just one thing I want to emphasize. First of all, the purpose of this A3 amendment is to address this issue of 6.25, page 6, line 25. And so it deletes that. And the important point here, members, is that in voting for this, we are not at all voting against Real ID or delaying or not implementing Real ID in the state of Minnesota. As has been mentioned, I think Mr. Keller and others had mentioned this, deleting this language related to aspiring citizens' driver's licenses will not in any way impede Real ID. So let me just emphasize that again. It will not impede Real ID. Minnesotans will be able to board airplanes. They will be able to visit relatives and family members on military bases. If you vote for this, you are in no way stopping the implementation of Real ID. So, and the second point is, which I don't think was mentioned, I think Ms. Robinson-Brand mentioned it, but I want to also emphasize that here we are in the Transportation Committee. Having driver's licenses for our aspiring citizens is basically a public safety issue for our roads and highways. Why wouldn't we want people who are driving to work, paying taxes, contributing to our economy, be able to have driver's insurance and a driver's license so that they have taken the appropriate tests written and behind the wheel and had the appropriate education to drive safely? That's one of the reasons why the business community, if you look at their letter, supports this idea of driver's licenses for aspiring citizens. And I'll just conclude, Madam Chair, by saying, you know, the letter that was referenced earlier by the Minnesota Business Immigration Coalition was signed by representatives of the Agri-Growth Council, the Midwest Food Processors Association, the milk producers, the Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, and the Restaurant Association. We have also in your packet, there's a letter from law enforcement that also supports driver's license for aspiring citizens. And, of course, we've heard very eloquent arguments from the faith community. There is a letter from the Catholic Conference also in your packet. So, we need to have a, as has been mentioned, a very specific discussion about this in a separate bill. And I think, unfortunately, this language, if it remains in the bill, precludes that conversation and makes it much more difficult for this legislature or future legislatures to undo something in statute. It's currently in rule, so we're not changing the rule. But by putting it in statute, we really do take a giant step backwards in terms of being able to have the discussion and the debate that we need to have here. As has been mentioned, 14 states, growing bipartisanship, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton carried this bill last year. I believe several other, we had bipartisan sponsorship on this, and I think that there's a growing bipartisanship, actually, on this question. So let's not tie our hands. Let's not limit this discussion. This is really a heartfelt issue for many people. It's a public safety question for all of us. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I would encourage everybody to vote yes on the A3 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to rise to support this amendment that we've put forward. Minnesotans are counting on us to pass Real ID, and that's what we ought to be focusing on. in bringing in this issue that affects our neighbors, our friends, workers in the state of Minnesota, and actually Minnesota's economic prosperity is not the place in this bill. We all went to the One Minnesota conference recently, Democrats and Republicans, and we tried to build bipartisan support and get information that really affects our communities. Minnesota has some of the has huge opportunities to help fully integrate our workers in our community and the families in our communities, close our disparity gaps so that we can be as successful as possible and to be leading the nation. We have a great state, and we have members in our community who ought to be treated as such, and they're taxpayers, they contribute to our communities, they help make us stronger, and they're our future, and we need to do all we can to reduce the barriers for economic prosperity for Minnesota and to support our Minnesota neighbors. And so I'm very supportive of this amendment and hope that others will join us.
Is there any other discussion on the amendment at this point? Okay. All right. There has been a roll call requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Rumbeck.
No.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Bernardi.
Aye.
Representative Barr C. Representative Barr R.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Hertas.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative McDonald.
No.
Representative Petersburg.
No.
Representative West.
No.
Representative Whalen.
No.
Representative Joachim.
Yes.
Members, there being 6 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Members, we will be going ahead then with a vote on the bill itself.
Madam Chair, I'd also request a roll call on the vote on the bill itself.
All right. And Representative Whalen, did you have a comment? Were you speaking?
Are we going to the final vote?
Yes,
maybe we have time for a comment. I have a few comments. I think potentially other members might have a few comments. Thank you, Madam Chair. So first, thank you to Representative Smith for your handling of the bill. We've had a lot of good, candid conversations, and the bill has been very cordial and pleasant. I know we remain in disagreement on some of the key provisions of the bill. I have serious concerns regarding Real ID, and I'm opposed to its implementation. I know we've heard a lot already on this, so I'll try to be brief and highlight my key concerns. Jim Harper, for example, stated in testimony in a bill in 2015 in the State Senate of New Hampshire that Real ID compliance is not a one-time or a short-term cost. Real ID compliance is a commitment to spend whatever the federal government requires for driver licensing forevermore. The bill was passed in the middle of the night as an amendment onto another bill, not a very good way to make legislation. And numerous states immediately rose up to oppose it, Minnesota included. In Minnesota, 200 of 201 legislators voted to prohibit Real ID implementation in 2009. Legislatively, from the federal government, not much has changed, but they continue to push back the deadlines of enforcement. We don't know exactly yet where the Trump administration will be on this issue. And so I understand the concerns of many that the threats of enforcement of these deadlines are becoming imminent. I disagree. I think it would behoove us to wait for the Trump administration to make a clear declaration on that. But regardless, Minnesota is faced with a terrible choice. If we don't comply, our residents will have to live in the uncertainty of whether their driver's licenses will continue to be accepted as a valid travel document on commercial airlines. And if we do comply, we are ceding a power that we have had since 1908. That is how we manage and process our driver's licenses. We are not ceding it solely to other elected officials, but even more concerning, we're ceding it to an unelected official, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who could at any time expand the use of Real ID. We can hope that the Department of Homeland Security would not do this, but history and experience suggests that with the federal government, they will expand their power if they can. I believe it's only a matter of time before they take more, and the federal government has done this over years. I don't see why now would be different. While I appreciate the language in the bill, Representative Smith, that says the state of Minnesota wouldn't comply with an expansion, an article from 2016 in the Western New England Law Review notes that the Department of Homeland Security determines whether a state has or has not met the requirements and whether the federal agencies may or may not accept driver's licenses issued by the state for federal purposes. So if we as a state refuse to comply with an added or expanded use of Real ID, really there's nothing stopping the Secretary of Homeland Security from saying that we are then not in compliance, and we will be facing the same debate that we're facing today. So again, Minnesota and other states are left with a terrible choice. If we don't act and there are no changes from Congress or the Trump administration, I understand and share the concerns of the citizens of Minnesota that they may not be able to board commercial aircraft or enter certain federal buildings without either an enhanced ID or a passport, that their Minnesota license may not be valid come 2018.
Members, we will be taking a vote on this before we adjourn, so I just want to remind you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that we should wait until we have more answers from the Trump administration, get their perspective on this. And in the meantime, I think we should continue to inform citizens of their need to either get a passport or an enhanced ID if they are frequenters of federal facilities and commercial airline travel. Because for me, and I know many others, the concerns regarding the federal government's encroachment upon states' rights outweigh the potential risk regarding adding an extra step to our citizens' travel plans. For this and many other factors, I would suggest that we as a state wait to act on Real ID. I understand that many disagree with me, and I believe that through the conversations that I've had, it's important to allow this bill to go through the committee process and to be vetted. So I will vote to allow it through the committee process so that other colleagues have an opportunity to ask their questions and potentially amend the bill. For me, if the bill remains in the form it's in or in a similar format, I will be a no on final passage if it gets to the floor of the House. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Smith.
Thank you. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask Representative Smith a couple of questions. Were you in the legislature when we passed the prohibition on Real ID?
Yes, please speak into the microphone,
okay,
Representative.
Were you in the legislature when legislation was passed prohibiting Real ID?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, no.
Okay, I was. It's a very controversial bill on both sides of the aisle. Reference was made to our January 4th Minnesota, where we had a workshop on building trust. Were you there?
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, I was there for part of the day.
Representative,
the point
follow-up?
I'm trying to make
Representative
is
Mason
there
was
are so many people, parts of our community, whether it's religious, whether it's business, that truly oppose at least one line in this bill. So, and we really, I believe, need to pass the Real ID, but it needs to be passed with the least amount of restrictions possible. So I guess I'm asking you to please take out the 6.25 so we can get on with the bill and it make it a little bit more palatable. You know, I guess I don't understand why you would add something that doesn't need to be in it.
All right. Just thank you. Representative Bernardi, or I'm sorry, Ibokim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also want to thank Representative Smith for carrying this bill. I know it probably has not been a very easy one to carry, and I know you as a very thoughtful legislator, and you've worked at the dual-track system to try to help with some people's concerns over this, and I do really appreciate that. As legislators, we know that our laws up here sometimes have unintended consequences, and of course, I'm sure you being an attorney understand that because you have to practice in the realm of those laws that we have that have those unintended consequences. And with crafting our legislation, we always try to figure those out ahead of time, try to mitigate them as much as we can. And usually we can do most of that. Today you've heard from the faith community, the legal community, the business community that all support undocumented workers getting driver's license. You have discussions over the years and letters from the public safety community also saying how important it is. And you have an opportunity here with the dual track system that you're trying to create to not only assure the folks that are worried about data practices, that are worried about the tribal identification to comply with federal law, but you have an opportunity to help another large realm of our community and part of our community that many, many, many folks, as you've heard here today, support. So I would just make another plea, as everybody else has, to take out this extraneous language that's not needed. If you're going to have a dual-track system, make it a real dual-track system. Thanks.
And I would be remiss if I didn't ask if there were public interest in testifying on the bill. Is there anyone in the audience who should testify? We have just a couple brief minutes because we are going to vote very quickly. All right, why don't you come up? All right, we have just now. I see there's two or three, so we have just a minute. All right, sir.
My name is Dr. Arthur Eschenlauer. I'm in the Lone West District, and I am a research biologist. One of the unintended consequences that I fear without removing 6.25 is the impact on public health, because of the fact that your ID is one of the things that you offer when you go to get public health services. Because of the fact that your ID is part of how you interact with the police, I'm very concerned that there will be reluctance. Well, more to the point, we will continue to have reluctance to engage the police when there's a crime or a crisis, go to get health care when you need preventative care or you have an infectious disease. So I am very concerned, since licenses are for public safety, I'm very concerned about these dimensions of public safety as well. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Do I see any others at this point? Okay. And you're together, are you? And okay, very good. If you can condense it to a minute, that would be much appreciated. Please state your name for the record.
Joanne Norheim, I live in Minneapolis.
DeCourcy Squire, I live in Minneapolis.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for listening to my statement regarding line 6.25. One more plea, 2 minutes. On November 10th, 2 days after the election, DeCourcy Squire and I were two people of a crowd of 5,000 protesters who marched and closed down Interstate 94. It was an anti-Trump march. During the campaign, there were words of mass deportations and walls. The march was not in favor of one candidate over another. It was a march in support of human rights for all. We shut down Interstate 94. The purpose was to get your attention. The purpose was to send this message. We fear that the new Trump administration will take away human rights. Do not take away our human rights. We had many chants that evening, but the most common chant was, "Say it loud, say it clear, immigrants are welcome here." I was moved. Never before in my 62 years had I witnessed a march of 5,000 people down my neighborhood streets and even sitting in peaceful protest on Highway 94. As we marched, the streets were lined with my neighbors who were amazed too. Those neighbors included hundreds of Somali and Latino immigrants. I will never forget the looks of wonder and joy and gratitude on their faces and their waves of, and gestures of support. That evening, DeCourcy and I were in the vast minority. We are white and we are older. The marchers were of all colors and they were mostly young. As I look around this room today, DeCourcy and I are no longer in the minority. Most of us in this room are white and older. Those other 5,000 protesters are now at work and school. But DeCourcy and I are here to tell you once again what we feel it means to be a good Minnesotan. It means supporting all of our neighbors. So I repeat, say it loud, say it clear, immigrants are welcome here. I ask you to please vote against line 6.25. Thank you.
Very good. And you did keep it to 2 minutes. Thank you so much. All right. Seeing no other hands raised, House File 3 is, as amended, is recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Transportation Finance Committee. A roll call has been requested, and the clerk will... I'm sorry.
Point of clarification real quick. I'm sorry, it might have happened when I was late. Was the bill actually amended, or...
There was an author's amendment.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. Sure. I just wanted to make sure I understood. Thank you.
And the clerk will take the roll, please.
Chair Runbeck.
Yes.
Representative Kosnick.
Yes.
Representative Bernardi.
No.
Representative Barr C. Representative Barr R.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Hertas. Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative McDonald.
Yes.
Representative Petersburg.
Yes.
Representative West.
Yes.
Representative Whalen.
Yes.
Representative Hertas.
Yes.
Representative Joachim.
No.
Okay, there being six ayes and eight nays. Other way, I'm sorry. There being eight ayes and six nays, the bill is passed and will be referred to the Transportation Finance Committee. And we are adjourned, members.